Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Aramarte Fio on blogtalkradio.com. The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience. Hello, I'm Rosanna Marte-Fio, and this is Gather Round. So, it's still winter where I am, sort of. The snow was out and all of that. So just come a little closer to the fireplace, and we're going to start now. We have Sarit Jacobson here. Hello, Sarit. Sarit?
Hi.
Hi. Okay. Just making sure.
Nice you up. Can you hear me?
Yeah, quite well. So it's all yours and your Israeli.
Amnon, are you still there?
Is he there?
Yeah, I'm still there.
Here he is.
Yeah, cool.
There you go.
So we got Amnon with us. He's from Israel. Right.
And
really,
he's a musician.
Cool.
Yes.
Yeah, really. I met him about 4 years ago when we were doing these groups on Facebook together, like having arguments with people all day, and it was fun. We fight the right-wingers together.
Sure.
Left against the primitive.
And it gets very at times because settlers and people that are racist, and we have to keep talking to them, you know, in case we might convert a person or wake up. So I wanted to ask Amnon about his songs, but I was wondering if I should read one to you all.
That would be excellent.
Okay. I really love this song called Madhouse.
Oh, yes. I watched that. Listen to it today. Please read it.
Something about why you wrote it or what made you write it?
Because the living in Israel, exactly that song. You need to be, and that is like that. Describing current situation in Israel. Situation. Can't imagine. I feel that way. The fanatic.
That's mind-blowing. It's beautiful.
And the politics, the big medals in Israel. So we want to.
Yeah, thought I'd read it. So it's a madhouse, madhouse. The country has become a madhouse, a madhouse. The country is really a madhouse and sets the agenda here. Almost every box of light. Entire government are criminals, and from you they steal. Well, I really said it's a madhouse. It's become a madhouse. The country is human trade. Human trade by anyone they can. No culture, the heart becomes cruel. Government of zero, existing for just time. Goes on, it becomes a maze and nowhere to step. Trapped in a mess. Want to get out, want to escape, but it gets you, it holds you stronger. How much brainwash take? It's a madhouse. a madhouse. Is that good?
It's a madhouse.
Yeah.
It is. That could be about the country. It could be about a lot of countries.
That's the last season. The problem is that there's a zero censorship. And radio station, broadcaster, editors, most of them falling to the government and to the capitalists. There is a...
Okay, something happened. They dropped. I know that there was a lot of static going on in the background. But I think Agrimony, are you here? Janet,
here.
Are you here? I thought maybe we could just talk a little bit. If they get back on, that'll be great. We will be putting up some of his songs on the Aram Artefio page on Facebook. It's very heroic, these Israelis who are fighting for Palestine. It's not the easiest thing. Many can't find work. Many have been thrown out of their family homes. It's not a fun time. But on a totally different topic, till they get back in, let me tell you, Agrimony, guess who found me? You know, you and I like to talk about Facebook. Guess who found me on Facebook?
I don't know.
Somebody from my last cruise.
Really? Wow.
And, you know, that's been several years. And,
yes.
you know, I hung with Rise Up Band from the Philippines. Well, I got online yesterday, and there was my friend. He's just gotten on Facebook, and he found me. So, how about that?
How about it? I like Facebook.
Yeah. You know, a couple years ago, 3 years ago, an old boyfriend found me on Facebook. And you met him because we got together for a while. We've got a date this summer. We may, when our brother moves, when our brother and our brother-in-law move into Chicago, actually from the burbs, we're planning on being up there. I mean, sometime in that area. And I hope you are too, whether it's for the yard sale, the big yard sale. And we need to be there. Of course, neither one of us really needs to walk off with everything we'll probably end up walking off with.
I know what he has that I want. I'm sorry, it's terrible.
Oh, what?
I'm almost asking if I can put in Dibby's for it. That his dining room table.
Oh, that's going with them. Yeah, that's going with them.
Oh, damn. All right, well.
With them. That is the dining room table after all. I'm probably going to end up back with, I had just recently been gifted with two great sleeping bags, but I don't know if they're going to have room. I mean, you know, it's like, well, they were keeping them because of camping and everything, but I may end up with those again.
Oh, yeah, all that stuff they store in the garage, they won't have.
No. Now, we're talking for our listeners about two guys who have a really nice, it's fairly spacious. Well, it's bigger than, I mean, I've got an awful lot of room, too, so who am I?
I like their house, though. I mean, they have a ton of room.
We like their house a lot, but it happens to be in the burbs. We'd like it better if it was in the city. So they may be going from a three-bedroom to a one-bedroom, and there won't be a downstairs like there is now. There's a rec room and a utility room and everything.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah.
I think it would be so hard to go from a house, especially because they have a good-sized house.
Yeah.
And that stuff you take for granted when you have a house, the garage, the outdoor space, they're going to lose that. And
yeah,
I hope
garden, no outdoor fires, nothing like that anymore. But, it's a challenge because, of course, it's great to be in the city. I mean, I miss the city. Sometimes I don't want to live there now, but I do miss it. So I understand that.
Well, if I were going to live in the city, there are some places like in Rogers Park and I guess part of it is still uptown, where there are some nice houses with decent yard space. I'm sure they're expensive as hell, but
very, very expensive. Years ago, five people and myself rented a big, big house on the north side, and it was pretty pricey then.
Yeah.
It was cheaper than we each would be paying for apartments individually, but
yeah, but still.
It had, you know, there were like, what, 6 bedrooms, 2 baths, on and
wow.
on, and it was really nice until we, well, we weren't all that mature in some ways, so, you know, so we all broke up, and, well, most of us broke up, and then we got back together and, you know, down the road, so it's sort of funny how adults behave, just like,
yeah,
but
that's your cat.
Yes, and I'm trying to get her away. She is just insisting on chirping. And you've got her.
I know, that's so funny. Her litter mate does the same thing.
Yeah.
I have her litter mate for the listeners.
Exactly.
And we have to get those two girls together on Skype some night and see what happens.
Oh, God.
I think the cats understand the internet idea, maybe. The dog doesn't. It's fascinating.
Yeah,
and
they seem to like it, and I think they mess with it when I'm not on. But yeah, I don't know. They get over here, Grassy. Come on. She just wants to chirp. See, she had her nice nap, and so now she's all active. But
yeah, they always nap.
Oh yeah. They have, somebody told me, you know, she used to have like 10 cats, and she could tell at night if somebody, you know, meowed or purred, she knew exactly who it was. And,
well,
and it's true. They all sound different, the meows.
They do.
You know, my big orange one rarely meows, and when he does, it's a tiny little voice. Whereas Reach doesn't talk much, but when he does, he sure isn't quiet, and he's ordering me around when he does.
Now, Oberon has kind of a quiet meow, too.
Yeah, I guess
he's a
voice. I don't
Sarah
know.
Sarah warbles.
Well, that's it. Grassy chirps.
Chirps, warbles, I think we call it the same thing. It sounds like her.
It's the same thing.
Because it was a trip when I hear it through my earpiece. I'm thinking, oh, wait a minute, she's over here.
Yeah.
Because I made what we call the Ruth Ann cake in our household, which is chocolate, because she gave me the recipe. And it's this wonderful recipe. If I can dig up, I know I've typed it out before.
Yeah.
Where you can make it all in one pan. It's wonderful. And that doesn't have any eggs, so I guess, you know, if you used margarine or some kind of vegan spread, it could be a vegan cake.
Yeah, yeah. Or some type of an oil or something. It was, well, you know, I found that in the cookbook, and it made me think that back in the grade school days, we had, you know, the show and tell, and everybody had to demonstrate making something. And I remember the night before, it's like, what am I going to do? And, you know, my parents had a mom and pop store, and one of the customers came in. Actually, he was, well, I guess he was a customer. But anyway, so he said, oh, here, you know. He started carving. He got a bar of soap, and he started carving some animal. It's like, well, that was lovely, but I can't do it. So you know, I don't know what I demonstrated. However, I remember her name was Carol, and she came in and demonstrated this cake. And when I found it in the cookbook, I thought, oh, I should send it to you guys. It's so simple, nice.
Well, it is, and it's delicious. You put like the butter spread or whatever you're going to use in a pan, and you put it in the oven and let it melt while you sift together the flour, the sugar, baking soda, salt, and cocoa. And then you add that to the pan, then you add vinegar, a tablespoon of vinegar, water, and some vanilla. And I always put them in a mixing cup when we make it and then add the liquid all together, and then you just stir it up. It takes like 2 minutes to mix this.
Yeah.
And you get this, like, extremely delicious cake, and when it came out of the oven right as the show was starting, Tara is, like, wanting the cake, and we have to really guard chocolate from her. Because, you know, of course, chocolate's not good for cats, but she loves it. And
these guys don't care about,
night I had made brownies, and we had, a big 13 by 9 pan of brownies cooling on a rack and go in, and she has eaten out a whole bunch of the top middle section. Not just clawed it, she was eating it and was ticked that I made her leave.
Well,
so I had to fight her for the cake tonight.
The cha-cha, well, guard it.
Yeah, well, we have what we call the cat safe.
Right.
We keep stuff in so she won't get at it. It's also the microwave. If anyone doesn't know, microwaves are great airtight containers. They will keep
up. We'll be back after Tommy to talk with running for public office locally.
Sure.
Because
hi, Tommy.
He's not here yet.
Oh, okay.
We have a recorded bit from Omo in Cyprus. So we'll do that, and Tommy should be calling in then. But, you know, he is our in-out-house anarchist, so, And he's going
to
talk.
I can eat cake while we listen to Omar.
You eat cake while Omar's on. Okay. Here we go.
Good day, everyone. Thank you for joining me on today's program. My name is Omar Abiyi. Today, we'll be discussing about the security challenges in the northern part of Nigeria. And I'd like to hear your opinion on ways you think the federal government of Nigeria can put an end to this bloodshed. Before I continue, I would like to pay my condolence to the family of late Professor Chinua Achebe. Professor Achebe was born on the 16th of November 1933 in the eastern part of Nigeria, and he died on the 21st of March 2013. Professor Achebe is well known for his great work in African literature, and most of his work received international recognition like Things Fall Apart and others. Until his death, he was a professor at Brown University in USA. Also, Nigerian President Dr. Goodluck Jonathan said he received the news with immense sadness and has condoled the family of the late professor. Like I said earlier on today, we'll be discussing about the security challenges in the northern part of Nigeria. On the 19th of March 2013, a traveling bus from Kano State, northern part of Nigeria, to Lagos was attacked. The 59-seater luxurious bus was heading to Lagos from Kano Motor Park, and according to reports, no fewer than 25 people were killed in the blast. The dreaded Islamic State Boko Haram has claimed responsibility for this attack. Also in the same week, a deadly violence occurred in Plateau State, killing about 20 people. This is an intertribal violence which is turning the once peaceful and loving state into a zone of anarchy and hell. This tragic incident occurred in Mabu Wase local government area of Plateau State. It is indeed a sad news because this is a conflict between two neighbors who have lived together for many years. The state governor, Mr. Jonajan, and other security to be beefed up in the area. Also in the week, the Nigerian House of Assembly has urged the President, Dr. Goodluck Jonathan, to quickly grant amnesty to the dreaded Islamic sect, Boko Haram, with the hope to bring to an end the various killings in the northern part of the country. If you remember very well, the rise of this Islamic state called Boko Haram has brought about the numbers of deaths in the northern part of the country to about 1,000 plus. It is very important that the government seek a possible and quick solution to bring to an end this bloodshed which is currently ravaging the northern part of Nigeria. We believe that this act is politically motivated and has nothing to do with religious sentiment. We hope the government of Nigeria will find a possible and quickest way to bring to an end this bloodshed in the northern part of the country before it gets out of hand. Like I said earlier on, the Nigerian House of Assembly has urged the president to quickly grant amnesty to the dreaded Islamic sect. I would like to hear from you if this is the only method you think the government can put a stop to the bloodshed in the northern part of the country. Kindly send me your emails to omo_amatefio@yahoo.com or Facebook me My Facebook account is Omo Abi. I would like to hear from you, and we hope you continue to put Nigeria into prayers with hope in God and believe that this conflict will soon resolve in the earliest time. Until I meet you again next week, I promise to reply all your mails on time, and I promise to keep you updated on latest events happening around Africa and the world. Remember, you are not a loser until you quit. Never you give up. Fight for your rights. Don't give up on your hope. Believe everything is possible. You can achieve everything in life only if you believe. Till I see you again next week, take care. Bye.
And that was Omo Ibia from Nigeria. And I just found out he is writing a book. So we'll be keeping everybody up to date on that. Now it's time for, Tommy Schmidt used to be the in-outhouse anarchist on Akasha Temple Live. So I think she's still going to be the in-outhouse anarchist, Tommy. What do you think?
In-house, outhouse. Yeah.
Wherever, you're our anarchist. But tonight you were going to talk a bit about, I will probably mispronounce,
Kropotkin.
Kropotkin.
Well, I don't know either, but I say
that,
Peter Kropotkin.
Looks like. That looks right.
Yeah.
He was prince in Russia years and years and years ago.
Yeah, and he was also a scientist.
Mm-hmm. A philosopher.
Philosopher, and his primary occupation was science, though, and geography, and that's how he made his living when he wasn't in jail.
Well, it's good to have something to do in your spare time when you're not in jail, I suppose.
That's right. The Tsar, I guess, was a little bit afraid of some of his ideas. But what's interesting is that as a scientist and as a social scientist, he wanted to take things that he was understanding about nature itself and see how these things might be applied to the human situation, since the human situation is also a part of nature, and yet the human situation acts very unnaturally. All right?
Right, yeah.
So, but that is our fate. That is what we do. That is part of what we do, is we create our own nature. We look at ourselves as being separated from creation in a way. And we have, because the Bible said so, we have dominion over all, you know. And it seems for the last at least 10,000 years, we have, at least in the West, if not all over the world, been involved in a sort of dominator culture, dominator kinds of civilizations which transfer from one to another, not a one of which has survived as a kingdom or as a nation or anything else. And yet we pretend today that our states, that our nations, that our dominator structures will survive forever. There's a U.S. stamp issued right now. It may have been issued for a long time. It's the American flag, and underneath it says "Freedom Forever."
Okay.
And
joke right
it's
now.
It's a lie. And it's self-deception, and it's ignorant, because nothing lasts forever. And least of all, a nation. And the ones that seem to go by most quickly are the most corrupt and evil, if you will, in a sense, in the way they treat themselves as special and everybody else as scapegoats. So Kropotkin, he wanted to be able to apply or at least investigate what he was understanding in nature and see if it might apply to the human situation. And he had various people that he studied, and I think Bakunin, and maybe there was a few others, and I'm still not an expert in this area, so I'm not going to pretend to be. But because the topic is much too broad, there are so many different ways that people look at anarchism, and what I'd like to do is just briefly explain Kropotkin's and explain mine. But Kropotkin looked at anarchism as being associated directly with socialism and communism. And those two words scare the hell out of people. But what he's talking about is socialism, communism, and anarchism without the state. Without a state. In other words, no state. Okay? So, how are people organized then? Well, generally they're organized in small groups. Tribes, if you will, or neighborhoods, or villages, or small towns. In other words, there is no formula for anarchism, and that is the whole point of anarchism. When Emma Goldman was out on her speaking tours, people would ask her, "Well, what should we do? How do we go about doing this?" And she wouldn't give them an answer. She would recommend general things like, hey, don't get married because it's a state institution and it's just going to take advantage of you. Yes, have families, have babies, raise babies, be good parents, but don't get married. And people are just beginning now to understand this. But
it was way before her time.
I'm not saying that marriage is a bad thing, and I'm not. Because my son just announced his engagement last week, and
it's a beautiful picture. Yes,
I'm thrilled. Yeah, I'm thrilled by it.
Well, it's an option, and it shouldn't be looked at as not a choice. I mean, those of us who have decided never again have made a choice, and so. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. Just like it's a choice to get married, it's a choice not to. Yeah.
So anarchism as a concept, first of all, you could trace it back on paper back to Muslims in the 9th century who were upset with the size and the behavior of the caliphate that was in power at that time, and they didn't think this was the model in which the Prophet wanted things to work. And so there were groups of anarchists that started way back then, and they were primarily Muslim. Before then, you could say that that the figure of Jesus Christ was definitely an anarchist. Socrates was definitely an anarchist. There are probably many, many more, and their way of going about it was was different. If you look at Jesus Christ, his was his anarchism was had a spirituality that was personal and political, and that seems to be a very powerful combination, regardless of what religion you might belong to, or even if you're atheistic, you could be spiritual in the sense of being interested in your own personal development as a human being, your own awareness, your own consciousness of what's going on. That would be spirituality, regardless of whether you believe in God or not. And your political awareness is your understanding of the fairness and the justice that's going on around you.
Mm-hmm.
So, generally, as governing institutions get bigger and bigger, and there has tended in the last 10,000 years under mostly patriarchic systems, there has tended to be this dominator hierarchical kind of structure that favors, guess what, it favors, you know, whoever is on top.
Mm-hmm.
And we've developed our values and our whole lives, our whole ways of thinking around this dominator culture. Now, I'm not, what I don't want to do is criticize, minimize, or demonize people who are into that, who have dedicated their lives to that dominator culture. Because on an individual level, it's not their fault, you know. It's just how we've all grown up. I mean, I grew up that way. I was 48 years old until I started thinking, even began to think differently. And which is kind of unusual for an older person. But, you know, things happened, which caused me to raise some questions and
that type of thing. It's clear in your head for whatever reason. And there, I have a question for you, because you were talking about neighborhoods, small groups,
mm-hmm.
just doing their own thing, which I think is a lovely idea. However, you know, there's some big economic issues involved. If I love pineapple, okay? I live in Illinois. It does not grow here. Now, I want some way to be able to trade with countries where it grows.
Right.
This is where I think that as far as pure anarchism would have us all back in just very small tribal groups.
Well, that's a presumption that you're making.
Yeah, I am making it.
Right.
Because otherwise,
based upon,
how are we going to get that?
You are presuming that anarchism, first of all, is an answer and that will solve problems.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not true.
Okay. It's more of a
anarchism is not an answer. It is a way of organizing. Now, the human body, let's take the human body for an example. The human body is it entertains 4 trillion different subatomic interactions every second. All right. It is anarchistic. The human body itself mm-hmm. is anarchistic. Mm-hmm. Systems operate differently.
And regardless of each other, although they're all connected.
And they are connected. And they become connected because evolutionarily it's been to their advantage to become connected in various ways that we still have, you know, maybe we don't even understand 1% of it, of these connections.
Mm-hmm.
So you love pineapple, and you think, well, we can't have there's, first of all, there's no such thing as pure anything, so there's no pure anarchism.
Right.
Okay? All right? And the anarchism that exists in area A is going to be different from the anarchism that exists in area B, in area C, in area D. But if you like pineapple, there's no reason why there can't be cooperation among small groups to make sure everybody gets pineapple. Okay? So we have to be careful about what our presumptions are about making a change like this. This is the first point that Kropotkin raises in his key essay. I think it's his key essay, which is Anarchism, Its Philosophy and Ideal. And he says, people presume that anarchism is some perfect state of mankind and that we're not anywhere close to being perfect, so we can't do it.
Yeah.
Well, that's wrong. That's just wrong. First of all, it's exactly the opposite. And anarchism is not this perfect state of mankind. It is our natural state. It is our natural state. And what we have now going on is an unnatural state.
Okay, so
what we're trying to do is get back to, is trying to get to a natural state.
Actually, this is an artificial constraint that we're living in now.
Right. And we apply the values of those artificial constraints to the idea of anarchism, and the elite like to keep these these negative ideas about anarchism going because they're obviously afraid of losing their power and their wealth.
Yes. Yeah.
And so anarchism has to most people, even to most progressives and most liberals, anarchism means chaos, lawlessness, run around and do anything you want to, break store windows, you know, the silliest of ideas.
Well, it's another four-letter word like socialism and communism to a lot of people.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And that's simply because they believe the hierarchical definition for anarchism.
Well, I have a question, Tommy. We've just got 2 minutes left. What is the difference between Kropotkin and some of the other people who did a lot of writing and fighting and were jailed a lot?
I can't specifically answer that question, but one of the big differences that still remains is when you look at, for example, socialism, is whether socialism or anarchism should exist within a state,
mm-hmm.
okay, or be controlled by a state. And the big difference with Kropotkin is that he is against the state. Now, he says, you know, the state should be destroyed, but and I don't agree with that, and I don't agree with everything that he says. But there's no need to destroy anything because anarchism is such a natural system that once it begins implementing itself, it will spread naturally, and it will naturally replace those systems that are unnatural.
So it's more organic.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I would like to get your promise that you'll come back.
Okay.
And talk with us again.
Yeah. There's a lot more to talk about because it's people have preconceived notions about what it is, and
mm-hmm.
And I think it's an important word to keep because we don't have anarchism now; we have hierarchy. We have a dominator system,
right.
And we should think about organizing without hierarchy.
Yeah, okay, I like that phrase that it's a word we should keep. So we'll keep it, and you'll come back and talk some more then.
Sure, I really appreciate your
love having you around, Tommy. So
okay. Well,
you have a nice remainder of the week, and then we'll see you soon.
Okay, hey, thanks.
Thank you.
See ya, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So now we're going to bring in slightly different spelling of the name that almost sounds the same, Janet K. Schmidt, who is running for alderperson on a local level. And hi, Janet.
Hey, Roseanne, how are you?
I wanted to, say I was sorry. Last month I jumped the gun and I was confused. I don't even know if I can use Mercury as an excuse. But anyway, you have an election now coming up April 9th.
Yeah, I think, what is that, 2 weeks?
From yesterday.
Yeah, it's getting close, though. So.
I think that, now you've been involved in the election process for years and years, but this is the first time that you've run for alderperson, and you have found out some things that it hasn't been all that much fun to find out.
Yeah, I don't know. It's politics is weird. I mean, it's like I don't know what to equate it to. When I ran for precinct committeeman, I ran unopposed except once, and I did. It was a very minor campaign, and I won. And this is a little harder because I do have competition.
Well, and
I am challenging someone who is.
Well, I'd like to say that this time you and some other independents got together to help each other.
Well, I guess that was the premise.
That was the idea. We kind of stood for
the same ideas of things that were problematic in our community.
Exactly. So I'd like to ask you how that has worked out, if you think that is, basically it sounds like a good idea, but it's had a lot of...
I still have very mixed feelings. I mean, we do have some of the same issues. One of the things about our community, we don't run as Democrats or Republicans. And the majority that is in power right now, we have 16 aldermen in our city and a mayor. And the majority belong to what they call the Good Government Party. And they've pretty well been in office for many years. My opponent is ending her 16 years as alderman and wanting four more. So we have career politicians that they don't feel they answer to anybody. Last night we had a mayoral debate with, there are three candidates. One that is running, I guess you would say, with me. I'm on we're independents that have banded together. I got, the premise was to save money on literature. We had pretty much some of the same ideas on crime, tax increment financing reform, some issues with housing, and the fact that our current government is not very transparent. many issues are not discussed in open forum where citizens can hear about them and comment on them. They are done behind closed doors, and this may or may not be legal, but this is how it is. And then it's like, this is a done deal. And 2 years ago, some independents got into office. And this year, there are independents challenging every candidate, I believe, except for one. And I don't know. On one hand, there's a lot of people that are angry with the powers that be.
Yeah.
At the same time, am I a true independent because I've allied with some people? I've learned that some of us are Republican, some of us are Democrat in real life, and some of the people who class themselves as Republican belong to the Tea Party and have beliefs that are fundamentally at odds with me, all right, which is very disheartening. And at this point in time, I suppose at the last, and I am looking at working on my own behalf. I have I had a debate since I talked to you.
Right.
And I have been, all the feedback I've gotten has been that I did well. I've had the Black Coalition in the area has come to my support, which I thought was very gratifying, and they're helping me get literature out. I'm going to have some new literature of my own, which will just stress my qualifications this weekend, and to start getting it out the last 2 weeks. My opponent and their party is known for putting out something nasty at the last minute, like the Thursday before the election. And so sometimes this makes me lose sleep because I wonder, what are they going to say about me?
Mm.
You know, I'm a pagan. Well, you know, that's no big surprise. I've been out as a pagan for, you know, 15 years. So
right.
I'm not hiding that. And nobody knows what religion other people are, although I do notice that when my opponent and I were at a debate, she made a point of reiterating where she went to high school and grade school. Catholic schools here in town. So I don't know if that's a jab at that.
It could have been innocent.
We're not upper income.
Well, you've been very honest about all that stuff.
I have been honest about it, and I don't know what they're going to come out with. So I have to kind of try to counteract. You know, by this time they're throwing mud at me. Who knows what it is? That's what they do because they don't want to lose this hold they have where they can just spend money. Do well for themselves. Are they dipping? I don't know. It's interesting. And that is certainly the appearance a lot of people have. And it comes down to the fact, you know, we had a mayoral debate last night, which was lovely. It was the big one. And the man who is running on my ticket had made a comment, if you look at the signs that are out in the community, it looks like For Sale is going to win the mayoral election because people are moving out of our town. It's very hard to sell a house here. I'm serious. If you wanted to buy a house here, it might be the time because there's houses all over. It is stunning to see all the houses for sale. And secondly, the houses that stay for sale. So we definitely have a problem in the city, and I hope that on April 9th people will, you know, make a change. I'm not going to run.
Illinois, which is in Illinois across from St. Louis. It's about 44,000 people.
Yeah. And I've stated I will not. I abhor career politicians. I don't think that the founding fathers of the United States ever intended for people to be career politicians. They were very much against the idea. You know, we were fighting a monarchy
mm-hmm.
with inherited rule, and we didn't want that. And the idea that someone's just going to be in office for 16 years collecting state pensions, has a county job, so she's double-dipping on a state pension, I think is wrong. And I've pledged, and I mean this, because my husband said, you know, if you say this, it'll come back to haunt you. I said it because I meant it. No one forced me to, that I will at most stand for re-election one time. I think everybody should get involved. And, you know, I don't know. A citizen should, you know, take a chance at it.
Right. Now, what is your program, I can't remember the word I want. Anyway, your plan, your outline for the next 13 days.
Well, my outline is to, I've got some videos that I'm going to be posting on YouTube and around Facebook, and anybody that sees these, please spread these. And I'm going to have some little, you know, a few minute bites where I can just say what I think on different issues. Yeah. As opposed to, you know, having to give speeches. Tomorrow night I'm speaking with the local Green Party at their meeting, which was kind of exciting to be asked to because they're really cool people. And
right.
we have a lot in common. And I hope to do that. You know, and like I said, this weekend is Easter, so I don't know how great a day Sunday is going to be to campaign. We've
mm-hmm.
had a lot of bad weather in the month of March, though, which made it hard to get out. So, that's what I'm going to do, be chugging along doing that and starting to make phone calls. Ruth Ann said she would make some calls for me.
Okay.
Gladly,
yep.
Yeah, and I just think it'll be nice. It's getting the vote out and hoping that people are fed up. You know, we had an incident where the current group of people spent $1 million on a park or for some land in our town that was at best worth $200,000, and I'm being generous.
Well, that's the
thing.
We all like parks, and we all think that's great. However, when you spend five times what it's worth just because you
right.
know someone, it's
right,
it's,
because that person had given campaign contributions. I mean, seriously, that is not a allegation that's pretty well true. The person that sold it had been a donor, and not only the $1 million, but all the money that has to be put in to develop the park.
Well,
when we have streets that are falling apart, we have curbs that crumble. I was walking down the street yesterday, and I couldn't believe how bad the sidewalks are on Main Street. But we're so concerned. They're so concerned with giving money to other companies.
Well, I did want to add too that your town is not the most non-racist place in the world.
Well, it is very racist, and this is something that I really find abhorrent. About a third of our population of 44,000 are African American or black. And it would just seem to me to make sense that about a third of the city jobs should be filled by African Americans, and yet they're not.
Wouldn't you think so? I mean, just
you would think so. And the attitude is, well, you know, let them apply, and if they're qualified, we'll hire them. But you know, the thing is, when you still have such a discrepancy in the number, I mean, it's way below. I don't know the percentage, but it's like out of 400 and some odd city employees, very much less than 50 are black. So we need to, and so maybe we need to work at that. We need to go out into minority job fairs in schools and encourage people to apply, saying we really want you to apply. We need to encourage minorities to run for office. There is one alderman out of 16 that is of color, and none of the ones running this time are of color. And I know there's several good candidates that I've talked to saying, why aren't you running instead of me? They've agreed to look at it in the future, so I think that's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
But I hope maybe I can make a difference, maybe promote some activities for young people that will help people. We have crime, we have gangs, that if there can be some more activities that outreach minority young people to encourage them that the city cares about them, this is a good place to live, that they're valued citizens and there's hope in their future, that might prevent some problems. And so that's something I hope to do after I'm elected. And
right. I mean, you've got, actually, there's a lot of things, because you and I have talked extensively over what you really want to implement, because it seems like so many of these politicians that have been there for ever since God was a baby, I mean, they really do not care as long as they get their money. And
the mayor of our town has been quoted. I mean, he's a high school graduate with he took a short course in EMT training. That's his sole higher education. He brags that he does not know how to use a computer and doesn't even know how to do email, because I guess he thinks the way he says it that he's cool, that he hired at a full-time employee to simply do his computer work.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's out of touch, and I think people realize that. But I think we need to bring people together, because I lived in the South, and I'm not going to say it's not racist in the South, because, of course, it is. There's racism everywhere. But I lived in Nashville, Tennessee, and of the four or five places that I lived during the time I lived there, every single place was very integrated. I didn't personally ever see issues, but I see it here. All right? And I've seen the way the current mayor speaks to black residents. It's a very condescending, patronizing tone, and the way he uses names and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't see anything wrong with the way things are, and I so much do. I mean,
yeah.
I'm embarrassed and ashamed that in 2013 this is still a problem, not just in my city, but in my state and in my country.
Yeah.
So I think maybe this is something, you know, I didn't necessarily wake up one day and say, I want to run for alderman, because you know what, there's a lot of bullshit with it. There's meetings to go to, people call you. I was asked, and they found no one else that was willing to challenge the status quo in my ward, so I said, fine, I'll do it. And then the more I've gone on, I'm thinking, why am I doing this? And I thought, well, maybe there is something I can do that would help bring people together, and I hope that is something.
Yeah, I think, well, you've got such good ideas, and there are ideas that maybe some have been implemented in other towns, but not in yours. You know, something that's happening a lot around the country is community gardens.
Well, that's another thing. You know, we've talked about that. I haven't broadcast that a great deal because I actually didn't want my opponent to steal it before the election.
Mm.
But that is something. I've been talking with our friend Mark Brown of Carondelet Community Gardens in St. Louis, and he's agreed to help me, and he's been contacted by some people around here that want to help, and we would like to get some community gardens. There's vacant lots that would be improved, I think, by gardens. It could help neighbors, you know, number one, we could grow nutritious food and share it.
And
but secondly, it brings people out of their houses and away from the tube and the computer and whatnot, and to meet their neighbors. And I think once you meet neighbors and, you know, talk and maybe have block parties and stuff around this, that it will bring people together.
Well, that's the whole thing. It's community gardens are win-win-win. Everybody that I've talked to and everything I've read and seen, I mean,
I think so.
They just, like you said, I mean, in the first place, you're getting great food. But you're building, I mean, community is the main part of that.
Well, and I think one thing that is a problem with the racism, and I mean, it is a horrible racist area, because people, even though the schools are integrated, obviously, and we shop in the same stores, people go through their life without having a lot of interaction. We may live in neighborhoods here where there are black people, but the whites and blacks don't really mix.
Yeah.
And, you know, the thing of it is, I think somebody has to make an effort.
Yeah.
To reach out and say, I'm your neighbor, let's, you know, be friends. Because, you know, we know our neighbors, and we have awesome that we can do this.
Yeah.
So I hope to promote that in my ward and maybe around the city. The current mayor sort of has a few neighborhood associations, but the ones that I guess he wasn't fond of, he doesn't work with. And I would like to see... hard to explain, but I would like to see not just, smaller neighborhood associations, so people really know each other, and they're looking out for each other, and I think it would make the city more attractive and, you know, encourage first-time home buyers to become buyers and not just renters, because when people own their home, maybe they feel a little more stake in the community. And there are some state and federal programs that we can use to help develop areas that need development, I guess, is the, you know, to get some people
there
around it.
There are a lot of tools. There are a lot of tools. But I just think from different things, you know, that we've talked about and all that, the people in the offices now where you are, they don't care. They're either proud of not knowing how to do anything, like the mayor, or they just don't care. It's like, oh, that's a program for those people.
Right, and I feel that a lot in our ward. I mean, a simple issue, this is petty as hell. You know, I've bitched about it. The city at some point went to buying these big fancy-ass trash cans that hold a zillion pounds of garbage. And they gave every resident one, and then they have the automated trucks pick them up, and they're like, awesome. But a lot of my ward does not have them. And the current alderman has said, well, it's because the streets are too narrow. Well, point of fact, they're not. I measured a street that has it versus ours. No, it's no different. That's not the reason. The reason is we have a lot of renters and a lot of, I think this is horrible, but a lot of the city people, the term renter is used as a euphemism for black. People know this.
Racism again. Yeah.
And you have to hear how they say it. But the thing of it is, you know, black people are pretty smart, and they know what's going on. And there's a lot of white people that don't like what's going on. So
I'm going to be calling for you. And I hope that we have you back, and you can talk about, you know, after the election, like what has been. So you told us a few of the things that you are planning on changing or working on. And so when you come back, you can tell us how it went and if the same old mayor got in or if the guy from your party or, you know.
We'll know that in 2 weeks, and then I'll take office the first Monday in May.
When
the new council takes office. So that's going to be very exciting. Cause
right, it will be.
I think it'll be cool to take the oath of office and really do something and try to make a positive change.
Our holiday, Beltane, May Day, it means different things for different people, but it's an exciting time. So, Janet, thank you so much.
Well, thanks for having me, Ruthann.
Look forward to, you know, catching up again. Let's see,
okay.
Is going
anytime.
Up. Good night.
Good night.